So for those of you who don't know Manfred Mueller, Manfred Mueller is a distinguished homeopathic practitioner and educator. Let me read his entry in J. Yasger's dictionary, which reads as follows. Manfred is a German-born U.S. homeopath who pioneered, and this is in quotes, reverse chronological tautopathy, clearing remedies, a systematic approach to removing the secondary effects of past suppressions, as from antibiotics, steroids, vaccines, etc., by a brief pre-treatment with the same or similar substance in potentized form. Mr. Mueller expanded on insights from Aphorism 40 and others of the Organon, where Hahnemann notes that when two or more dissimilar diseases are present, it may be necessary to alternate remedies to effect a total cure. In 1989, he founded the Homeopathic College. The URL website is thehomeopathiccollege.org, so T-H-E, homeopathiccollege.org. And he's been the president of the North American Society of Homeopaths since 2005. Manfred's been in full-time homeopathic practice since 1986, and he's currently an official clinical rotation site for medical students and residents nationwide. In 1989, he founded the Homeopathic College. And as I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of information on that site, articles, all kinds of very interesting information about the courses that they offer. So, again, that's thehomeopathiccollege.org. And Mr. Mueller is also a board member of the Homeopathic Action Alliance and former board member of the Council for Homeopathic Education. Now, I could go on and read more and more about Mr. Mueller, but let me just say personally that the moment that I met Manfred, I immediately had an instant liking for him, and immediately, and I don't know why this is the case, I'm not particularly intuitive or empathic, but immediately I had this sense that this was somebody of tremendous homeopathic scholarship who had done a tremendous amount of research and had essentially brought together a large amount of very important information and had developed a very systematic way of applying the fundamental principles of the Organon in such a way to affect great success in practice. So I just immediately liked him and felt that this was somebody we could all learn from, and so I'm very pleased to welcome and introduce Mr. Manfred Mueller. So thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me, Kim, for doing this. This is great, and I hope I'll be able to live up to the accolades.
By the way, Manfred has a wonderful series of CDs that are available either through his website or our website. If you just go to the What's New page on our website, or you just type in on any page other than the home page in the search area, which is in the upper right-hand corner, Manfred Mueller, you'll find the page which lists all the various CDs and courses that he offers. So again, thank you very much. Now, I thought I would just start. The title of the class this evening is Decoding the Organon, Hahnemann's Pointers for Curing Today's Complex Chronic Disorders. So I thought perhaps you could start briefly by just telling us why you feel that actually new methods are actually required in contemporary homeopathic practice.
Well, in the modern practice in the industrial world, at least, we're faced with many more new and different disorders than homeopathy and homeopaths have treated in the 19th or even the 20th century. Hahnemann had discovered that in addition to psychological factors, unhealthy lifestyle, living conditions, poverty, and the ever-present unsuitable treatments, chronic disorders are the long-term devastating result of earlier infections. These progressive contagious diseases eventually weaken the entire constitution and create a wide variety of chronic illnesses. Hahnemann classified these chronic disorders as natural chronic diseases. However, Hahnemann also stated in Aphorism 41, the majority of chronic disorders are not natural disorders, but artificial disorders. Quote, the new, often very tedious, morbid conditions produced by the constant repetition of the unsuitable medicinal agent. End of quote. He described them as, quote, corresponding to the nature of this agent. Again, corresponding to the nature of this agent, end of quote, meaning having symptoms of the drug that induced it. Again, in Aphorism 74, he discussed the artificially induced chronic disorders, and in 75, he concludes pessimistically that the iatrogenic disorders are, quote, of all chronic diseases, the most deplorable and most incurable. And I regret to add that it is apparently impossible to discover or to hit upon any remedies for their cure when they have reached any considerable height, end of quote. It is in the cure of natural diseases, both acute and chronic, where classical homeopathy has excelled and still excels. We should not and cannot expect, however, to be able to cure the multiple new artificially induced disorders with the same remedy and with the same methods that natural chronic diseases were cured with in the 19th century. The iatrogenic disorders have since multiplied and make up the overwhelming majority of today's chronic disorders. We need new methods to undo the more tedious and difficult to cure complex iatrogenic disorders. And in this, we can greatly benefit from experimentally derived maxims and guidelines left us by Hahnemann and his students. We must use all of them as well as innovations in treatment made since the 19th century and since Hahnemann to cure today's complex chronic artificial conditions.
Oh, very interesting. So, Manfred, how would you describe the modern disorders as being different from what Hahnemann had to contend with, or what Kent or any of these older time practitioners had to contend with?
Well, first of all, there's a great increase in allergic hypersensitivity disorders, inflammatory conditions, autoimmune disorders, and the so-called proliferative conditions like neoplasms and cancer in every system, organ, and tissue. These conditions are complex, and they're the combined result of iatrogenic intervention, such as surgical manipulation, mass inoculations of vaccines containing harmful ingredients, widespread use of suppressive medications, toxic dental materials, diagnostic and therapeutic radioactive injections or irradiation, widespread industrial, agricultural, occupational exposure and injury, indoor pollutants, toxic chemicals and consumer products, such as cleaning agents, building materials, then mass irradiation with electromagnetic fields, with microwaves, from satellites as well as from cell phone towers in the whole wireless communication system, the various devices, organized adulteration of food, water, and cosmetics. When I say organized, I'm saying deliberate. Further, genetic modification of plants and animals, direct and indirect outcomes of modern warfare, both covert and overt, including weaponized biological and chemical agents, fallout of radioactive materials, global weather modifications systems, where barium, aluminum, and other toxic dust is sprayed out of airplanes. There are many additional causes, such as nanotechnology, the health effects of which have not yet been fully understood. And all of these create artificial changes, mutations, and new inherited and congenital disorders. These disorders are different because they're more serious, they're far more complicated, and far more difficult to cure than the natural diseases. We need new medicines to conquer these artificial diseases. In nearly 20 years of clinical experimentation in my practice, with over 400 new agents, show that we can expect the most remarkable results with a method that we're here describing.
Manfred, as you read through that list, I was thinking, God, how the world has changed, since since Hahnemann's lifetime till today, and how many new stresses have been introduced into our lifestyles and the impact that has on homeopathic practice. So it's very interesting that you're talking about this. I'm curious, how do you see that we should actually, obviously there's all these artificial diseases that didn't exist, that Hahnemann didn't have to contend with. How do you see the contemporary homeopath addressing these types of issues today?
Well, we should and can learn from the early homeopaths. We should understand what Hahnemann meant by the primary and secondary effect of drugs. We should then know why Lilienthal cited different measures for primary and secondary effects of poisons under his chapter on poisoning. Classical homeopaths clearly saw the adverse effects for medical treatment of daily dosing, including the massive amounts of mercury that were used in those days. In the treatment of today's disorders, we need to fully understand the principles of antidoting toxins, and how to apply them to the current, far more complicated situation. In doing so, we continuously need to apply earlier clinical thought to our current situation. I go into these methods, and I also go into how Herring, Burnett, Clark, Fubister, and Grimmer already have seen this problem. They routinely treated artificial chronic diseases resulting from drugs, medical procedures, and poisons. Instead of finding a remedy that was homeopathic to the totality of the symptoms, they found it necessary to counteract so-called obstacles to cure, such as resulting from previous drug treatment, anesthetics, x-rays, and other toxic exposures. And they used known antidotes to do this. For example, Burnett antidoted the secondary effects of the smallpox vaccine, a disorder he called vaccinosis, with Thuja occidentalis, but also with variolinum. Variolinum being the medicine made from the smallpox. Burnett used ether in potency to antidote the secondary effect of the anesthetic that prevented progress. For example, he noticed that other remedies were indicated didn't work until he had antidoted ether. So he would give ether in a 30C potency first, and then he was able to treat the rest of the condition. In case of ether, its primary effects, drowsiness and faint feeling, by the way, were more easily counteracted with vinegar. So that tells you some difference in how to antidote primary effects and secondary effects. As homeopaths, we should know these things. Clark suggested that potentized rabies vaccine should be available for the adverse effects of the rabies shot, which he said could produce a symptom very similar to real rabies in some people. Fubister gave Natrum muriaticum to address the effects of excessive salt intake, and I know other homeopaths gave phosphorus for that same purpose. This was done in acute as well as chronic poisoning. Dr. Tyler, Marker Tyler, related a cure with aluminum of chronic constipation in a woman who had cooked in aluminum pots for several decades. And then I guess the most thorough in terms of treatment of previous adverse effects from other treatments was Dr. Grimmer. Grimmer treated a lot of cancer patients, and he found that the results of radiation, even surgery, and chemotherapy created an obstacle to cure that he could remove with cadmium iodatum and also with many of the other cadmiums and several other remedies. With these, he addressed the secondary effects of surgery as well as radiation and chemotherapy. I also read in his his collected works that he had begun to experiment with potentized X-ray to remove the adverse effects of diagnostic radiation. Ramanlal Patel is an interesting Indian homeopath who early on already experimented with potentized medications, drugs, and he wrote a book called What is Tautopathy, where he describes many of his own cases.
Very interesting. Manfred, now some of the remedies that you were mentioning to use to kind of clear out the effects of these artificial diseases include remedies which are not necessarily isopathic, in other words, like Thuja, for example, for vaccinosis. But then some of them, like variolinum for, you know, which is actually the nosa from smallpox, or aluminum for somebody who got aluminum toxicity from using pots. So I'm curious, because I know there's a lot of controversy over this issue. Do you advocate the use of potentized drugs and toxins to address these types of disorders?
Yes, I do. Their systematic use, according to the rules laid down in the Organon and according to later observations made by other homeopaths, including guidelines I developed since, to remove the effects of drugs or and other exposures, should be standard homeopathic practice. It would not only make homeopathy safer, it would also make it more effective. And I go into this, into why this is in the tutorials. I have called remedies from potentized allopathic drugs for the pharmacodes, from the Greek word pharmakon. Pharmakon means drug. It also means poison, an interesting fact.
That's very interesting, isn't it?
That means the Greeks already realized that anything that's a poison can also be used as a drug.
Yeah.
The method of treating a drug-induced disorder with a potentized drug is called the tautopathic method. By the way, some people call it isopathic method. There's a slight difference between isos, the Greek word isos, and tautos. Isos meaning equal, which is mathematically equal,
right,
whereas tautos means self-same or identical. So tautopathic is the proper term for this approach because we're using the identical substance, however, in potentized form. Now, Hahnemann made it clear that the effect of these drugs, if you give something for a cause in potentized form, is actually because it's potentized, not the same thing, but it is a similar thing. So you could say, actually, tautopathy in all cases is homeopathy.
Right.
I think it's by far the most specific and most effective way of removing the secondary effects of drugs, vaccines, radiation, poisons, etc. I tried Thuja for today's vaccines, and it does not work. But what works is taking the vaccines, potentize them, and removing the secondary effects. In addition to the tautopathic approach, as you said, Kim, we also have other remedies, and Thuja is an example. There are many others, and in the Materia Medica, in the appendix behind after each remedy symptomatology, we can find the specific effects. How to remove specific effects of a poison or of a drug, and also how to antidote the effects of that remedy, as well as the primary effects of the substance that the remedy is originally made from. So there are also remedies that have already been tested clinically, so to speak, that have specific symptoms. So, for example, aurum metallicum works for the structural changes in the heart that develop as a result of chronic mercury poisoning. The effects of lifestyle and emotional factors that contribute to the chronic disorder may also be addressed by specific remedies, such as Nux vomica for the effects of overindulgence or opium for post-traumatic stress. So there are many ways we can antidote, and the principles of antidoting really should be understood by homeopaths in the modern world because we can do so much simply by antidoting the effects of things people have been exposed to in their environment and even internally. We'll talk a little more about that later. And finally, there are the constitutional, meaning the inherited and acquired susceptibilities or predispositions that should be addressed. I've myself added a number of new antidotes that are specific for certain effects of modern exposure. So, for example, I found that Arnica works very well if you're being battered by wireless radiation and also by after airplane trips. Nux vomica for the polytoxic effects of the big box stores. So if you find yourself feeling achy and terribly miserable after being in one of those stores, you might want to take a dose of Nux vomica. Many of the products that are sold today in these stores are highly toxic, and the body is just overburdened with these poisons when they suddenly come into our body as we walk through these doors. We discuss more of these in the CDs.
Manfred, one of the things that probably is, or one of the most toxic things that people are exposed to in the environment is their fillings, their mercury amalgam fillings.
Right.
And you know, you see this all the time with your patients, that you can see the negative impact that the mercury has on their, you know, nervous system function, their immune system, so on and so forth. So I'm curious, when you have a patient who you assess as having some type of mercury toxicity from their fillings or from some other source, would you actually give homeopathic mercury to counteract the effect of that toxic mercury?
No, I don't. And the reason for this is poisons such as mercury compounds produce the primary effects of the toxin so long as they remain in the tissue. So if you have mercury from the amalgam fillings, there would be mercury in your body that producing primary effects still. And if you give potentized version of that very substance, you may actually seriously aggravate the condition. So long as the toxin remains in the body, this is universally the case. I actually think this is a law of cure. I don't think we should counteract the primary effects of any drug or any toxin with its potentized form. This is does not mean it's not effective, but there's a gentler method. So, an excellent series of studies was done in Bengal, where they actually treated persons in entire villages that were poisoned by arsenic in the groundwater, and they used arsenicum album, and these studies found that the arsenicum album definitely improved the level of poisoning, the excretion of arsenic, and also the well-being of the patients. They have photographs and everything to prove it. However, the studies did not explore how this medicine affected the villagers as far as their side effects from the treatments. When you talk about a serious conditions like arsenic poisoning, any improvement is wonderful, even if it produces side effects. So I think they didn't really worry that much about it. In the less extreme poisoning, I think it's more important that we not aggravate conditions, and that is possible by being very careful. I myself had a chronic case of eczema. I was working with a lady who had symptoms clearly indicating the remedy sulfur. But when she received a dose of sulfur, the symptoms were aggravated terribly. After exploring further, I found that the woman's drinking water and bathing water had a rotten egg odor, and this was indicating that there was sulfur in the well. And that proved that she's exposed to sulfur. So the sulfur may have produced her symptoms. So instead of using sulfur, I used a similar substance, a known antidote, in the meantime to reduce the symptoms while counseling her about removing the sulfur, which in this case only could be done through moving from the location because it's very difficult to filter out sulfur from a well. And she did that. She ended up moving, and after she had moved to a new location, the sulfur was given again, and it cured the case beautifully in a few weeks.
That's very interesting.
So Hahnemann gave us the pointer here. He hints in the Organon that we first must remove the sustaining cause, then treat for its effects. And as a rule, I think what we can say is only the secondary effects of a drug or poison should be removed with a pharmacode, with a potentized form of that drug. In cases of mercury toxicity resulting from amalgam fillings, we actually start with a protocol that includes removal of the fillings and replacing them, of course, with a better material. And then also that procedure has a protocol that needs to be carefully followed because some people, even simply from removing the amalgam fillings, will have adverse reactions. And in order to avoid those, one needs to follow a protocol, which we discuss in the disc. Also, there's a protocol of removing the mercury afterwards, which has already entered the tissue. And mercury enters every tissue in every organ within 2 weeks of placing a filling. This was found by Murray Vimy and Fritz Lohscheider, who studied monkeys and sheep, and labeled the mercury with radioisotopes, and then this showed up in x-rays, so they could tell that the mercury moved within 2 weeks after placing the fillings in the mouth of these animals and moved to the brain, the spinal columns, the liver, the kidneys, etc. So we know for a fact where mercury goes. And as homeopaths, we have an option to antidote the symptoms of mercury poisoning with remedies like Heparsulfurus calcareum. We also have probably another 50 or so mercury antidotes in addition to that that are more specific for certain conditions. I give the Heparsulfurin low potency, 3 to 12x, which some pharmacists feel like it's very surprising, even though it's not uncommon that 19th century homeopaths used exactly those potencies when they were faced with mercury poisoning and patients had been treated with mercury for syphilis, for example. Hahnemann actually used the crude substance. He gave them Heparsulfurin in crude form, a very nasty smelling substance, smells like sulfur. So in the tutorial, I go more in detail into these issues.
It's a very interesting discussion. Manfred, earlier you referenced aphorism 40, where Hahnemann talks about having two dissimilar diseases at the same time, occupying different organ and tissue systems in the body and forming what he refers to as a complex disease. And I see where you're going in terms of your discussion of all of these new artificial diseases and the complication of patients today that have, you know, multiple diseases, and therefore creating a challenging situation for homeopathic practice. Now, when you have a situation like this where you have a complex chronic disorder, do you find in your protocol that it matters which part you address first?
Absolutely. The most important factor clinically appears to be the time factor on how this complex chronic artificial illness, you could say these illnesses, evolved over time. There's a definite chronological order to their cure. Hahnemann presented his findings on this matter in the Organon. He described that natural diseases that follow each other either cure or suppress each other, depending on whether they're similar or dissimilar. This is the experimental basis even for the whole entire homeopathic method, this recognition of seeing that how two diseases that follow each other affect each other. According to Hahnemann, we must first remove any sustaining causes, as I said earlier, and it's very important that we understand that when two dissimilar diseases follow each other, they do not cure the previous illness. Instead, they add a new illness in the organisms and somewhere else in the organism, depending on what organs they affect. So each drug that is given for a previous disorder will add a new drug disorder. Now, if drugs later interfere with proper treatment, homeopathic treatment, then and it could be either through their primary or secondary effect, we need to remove these drugs before we can cure the case. That means that we need to counsel our patients or clients, depending on what jurisdiction we practice, about the adverse effects of vaccines, drugs, as well as surgical procedures, diagnostic tests, etc. And we need to encourage them to make the right choice. Ultimately, of course, it's up to the patient to decide what they would like to do. We need to show them how to avoid and protect themselves against toxins in the first place. We need to provide them with suitable antidotes. And we need to know how to identify the secondary effects when they are there and when they're preventing treatment from progressing. And we also need to know how to remove those. For example, Herring observed that during cure, symptoms disappear in the reverse order of their appearance. So with all of these observations, clinical observations, we can conclude that the most recent drug disorder must be removed first. This should be followed by the next most recent drug disorder and continued in that manner until all disorders have been removed. Finally, the underlying hereditary susceptibilities should be addressed. And I was able to confirm this clinically again and again. I've tested this for, as I said earlier, for nearly 20 years now. I started this experimenting with this method 19 years ago. So if you don't follow the chronological sequence, you will see that very often aggravations occur. And it's very important to understand what these aggravations mean. When you don't treat the more recent drugs first, for example, when you treat an older drug disorder first that was then suppressed by a subsequent drug, the medicine we're using is no longer similar to the most overt, or we could also say the most superficial, the most on the surface illness. And instead, it's trying to stimulate the organism to resolve a condition that's deeper. And however, that suppression, the secondary effects of the suppressive drugs does not allow that. So we have an obstacle to cure, causing an aggravation with no improvement. These aggravations can be completely avoided by following the correct chronological order. We commonly encounter persons suffering from multiple layers of artificial induced disorders. And this is, of course, the result of the best of modern medicine has to offer. And such clients often report taking a homeopathic constitutional remedy under guidance of another homeopath who use methods that may have worked well for natural chronic diseases at a time when things were still simple. Then they report they suffered severe aggravations and feel terrible for months, in some cases never recovering. This is something that would never happen if we first removed the obstacles to cure with a brief pretreatment we're talking about in reverse chronological tautopathy. And these disorders, these iatrogenic artificial disorders, can quickly disappear by beginning the treatment simply by antidoting in reverse order all known influences that created them. And this can be often easily elicited from the history. In fact, more often than not, after you've reversed these artificial disorders, in other words, the iatrogenic drug disorders, there's no need for any further treatment at all. In many cases, people are perfectly free from symptoms because the entire condition, and they often were told, in this unknown cause, complex idiopathic disorder like Sjogren syndrome. And yet all you give is a series of pharmacodes in the reverse order of how these medications were given. We have a more detailed discussion in this on how to do the reverse chronological tautopathy and how to deal with complications and so forth.
Yeah, you know, Matthew, I really appreciate this discussion because it's really in complete accordance with the principles laid down in the Organon by Hahnemann. It's interesting to me that it seems that a lot of people have not read the Organon deeply or it seems to have missed over that, because one of the common opinions or beliefs that exists in our community today is that when you find, and I don't like the word constitutional, I don't think you do either, but quote-unquote constitutional remedy or chronic remedy for the patient, and that will affect and treat them under all circumstances, regardless of what happens to them. You know, they get hit by a car, they get a trauma, they get a grief, they get a vaccination. It doesn't matter, that quote-unquote constitutional remedy will always be the remedy for them. And many people believe that this is the tenet, the fundamental principle of classical homeopathy, one remedy, one disease. So I'm curious, could you answer that? Do you feel that this approach that you're using of using more than one remedy to treat multiple chronic disease, artificial disease, if somebody called that polypharmacy, how would you respond to that?
Well, first of all, Hahnemann said that for any chronic disorder, we may need more than one remedy to cure it. He also advocated giving two or more remedies in alternation. So, for example, he discussed a situation when two contagious diseases existed simultaneously in an individual, affecting one part or another, such as in cases of syphilis and gonorrhea simultaneously, forming a complex disorder that he actually said was two separate disorders, and he recommended in Aphorism 40 that remedies covering each disease are given in alternation. And I'm using the same principle. I'm applying the same principle to complex artificial chronic disorders, which may have been suppressed from decades of multiple medications, may have led to multiple health problems, complex health problems in a wide variety of different organs and systems. And in those cases, we do need to address each and every one of these disorders with a proper and correct similum. So Hahnemann never actually spoke of similum as in the sense of a single remedy for the whole person. He spoke of it as a remedy for the disease, for one given disease. So you're correct in saying that, yes, some people have not read the Organon. Many homeopaths...
or at least it seems they haven't understood it maybe completely. I mean,
well,
I don't know, but in any case, it's an,
maybe.
It's an interesting situation we find ourselves in.
I think what we see a lot today is that homeopaths are looking for new, obscure, extremely exotic and rare remedies because we're dealing with such exotic and rare symptoms on a daily basis almost that are the result of all these multiple and exotic drugs and poisons that people are exposed to and have been exposed to in the past. So what we're encountering is new, constantly new illnesses that don't match the existing materia medica. And this is not, in my view, the answer to this is not to try to find more exotic and more exotic remedies, although perhaps we should simply prove the medical drugs that are in the market, and we should probably prove all the various common poisons that people are exposed to in their daily life. That would be very helpful. But... So when these remedies are so more and more difficult to find, which was not the case in the early days where you had these natural disorders mostly, and of course you already had some iatrogenic disorders, and homeopaths were well aware of certain known homeopathic remedies that would solve their problems. Today, what we've got is a single patient who's on allopurinol, propranolol, Plavix, Lasix, Imitrex, Prevacid, Zocor, Effexor, Prednisone, Benadryl, sometimes all at once, sometimes has taken these over a series of years and more. I've got clients that report more than 50 different medications, many of which have clearly led to new illnesses when you look at their history. And you can certainly study the side effects and known effects of these drugs, and you can find that often in the evolution of their illness, the side effects suddenly show up as a new illness. In addition to that, we've got tetanus shots, flu and pneumonia vaccines, surgeries. We've got exposure to formaldehyde, monosodium glutamate, aspartame, aluminum, and mercury. Plus, then we have all of this in an environment saturated with microwaves from wireless to communication. If you want to try to cover all of this with one single remedy, good luck. So the other method is, as you said earlier, is the constitutional remedy, a remedy that corresponds to psychophysical characteristics of the patient. this is the most hazardous approach to use for these chronic artificial diseases, because we have a multi-layered suppression. We have mutual interactive effects of prior medications as well as current medication that are all dissimilar to the constitutional characteristics of the patient. That remedy cannot possibly resonate with that patient, because the patient is under tremendous amount of disordering effects. So if you give that remedy, the whole constitution will rally and attempt to address years of drug treatment and all the ones trying to remove all of this. Instead, what you'll get is massive aggravation and very little real effect. And because of such aggravations, all too often these cases are relegated to the incurable pile. The fact is, these cases are curable if you understand what you're dealing with. The reverse chronological tautopathy method is very simple. We systematically and gently counteract the secondary action of each drug once it has been discontinued, one by one in the reverse order. This process lasts several weeks. And soon, more simple and more common symptoms will appear that are easily covered and cured by the most well-known polycrests. With this method, we can bring order into complex situations. Patients on multiple medications for chronic disorders can quickly recover from their multiple conditions and once again enjoy perfect health. This method is very different from polypharmacy, where remedies are given simultaneously, such as in combination products. It's a very different thing. In this case, reverse chronological tautopathy, we give one remedy at a time by itself. The RCT method is specific, and it allows the body to reverse its evolution towards iatrogenic and toxic disease. Its application is completely rational and sound. In addition to homeopathic studies, there are more than 1,000 scientific studies that support the effects that we're seeing. For example, the hormesis effect. Studies show that administration of a small amount of a toxin introduces a protective mechanism against large amounts of that same toxin. More than 1,000 studies show that this actually works. The RCT method is scientifically sound, therefore, and should be adopted as a standard therapy for iatrogenic and toxic disorders.
Very interesting, Manfred. I'm curious, what do you do when you follow your protocol and you're giving these various tautopathic remedies to address these various diseases, artificial illnesses or whatever? What do you do, first of all, when that approach doesn't seem to cure the chronic disorder of the patient? And also, what do you do if you can't identify those various types of stresses which may have led to those artificial diseases?
Well, in both cases, actually, we rely on pure Hanuman and homeopathy. Hmm. We identify the dissimilar disorders that coexist in the patient, and find the suitable remedies that are specific to each disorder, and we don't really need to know necessarily the causes. We can also use the homeopathic method, which means we're going to simply find a remedy that is similar. So if a disorder's cause cannot be identified, it can be removed by a remedy that matches that particular disorder, rather than the massive amounts of bewildering symptoms. Most of these factors can be removed very quickly. It doesn't take long. Then there's other things that come up in addition to what we've mentioned, such as grief, overexertion, or any other cause. These are also addressed in homeopathy with specific remedies. and can be easily identified. And finally, we, of course, are looking at the constitutional characteristics, too. And if there's something that we see that can be addressed with treatment, then, of course, we should. So, for example, in the old days, they saw the tuberculous dyscrasia. And, of course, in the last 100 years or so, that has led, I think, the early 20th century homeopaths found that many tuberculous conditions led to a new kind of mutation of people who became susceptible to cancer. And today I see a lot of people have this cancer constitution. I mentioned that in my discs and also have referred to it elsewhere. So the constitutional remedies, which I think is really not an accurate term, is really misleading because constitution is something really actually fixed. But we do have inherited predisposition and susceptibilities which can be addressed through homeopathic treatment and eradicated. And that's really what we're trying to do. And predisposition that I've encountered in my practice has been the cancer diathesis that can be addressed with a carcinosins.
Manfred, you know, one of the questions that students ask most frequently and something you hear quite a bit of discussion about is the whole issue of posology,
sure.
You know, especially because a lot of us originally were trained as, Kentian fourth edition organon prescribers, dry dose weight approach. You know, we almost all started that way. And then, you know, only later on found out about the fifth and sixth editions of the organon and the Q potencies and all that stuff.
Right.
So I'm curious, in terms of your own practice, do you use the Q potencies? How do you repeat? Do you feel that dose is important? Well, what is your opinion about all this?
Yes, the dose is crucial for the success of homeopathic treatment. Our patients are faced with all these anecdotal factors in their lives, anecdotal to the homeopathic treatment, like never before in history. We need to educate our clients, and I'm saying clients because in where I work basically as a consultant, and we need to show them how they can avoid them. Repeating a remedy is one way to make sure that the remedy is effective. And if you got antidoted, the next day you take another dose, well, you have the effect of the remedy. What if you wait a month or two? And I started that way. I used to be trained in the fourth edition Organon until I started studying the sixth edition. And I found that there's a method that you can actually repeat daily. And that in today's world makes much more sense because you avoid the antidotal factors. And, of course, that is done with a new and what Hahnemann calls the most perfect of all potencies that he had developed. And that's the so-called Q potencies. I insist on the term Q potencies rather than LM potencies because LM potencies is a misnomer for two reasons. First of all, LM never meant 50,000. It
right.
It actually means 950. It also the M potencies were reserved for 1,000 centesimal potencies, 1,000 C potencies. So it is really a misnomer in that sense that their LM potencies are not 50,000 centesimal. It's a completely different potentization if you carefully study the description of these potencies. In any case, the dose is also important because their sensitivities vary tremendously, especially today in individuals. You can't just give everybody the same dose anymore. And some people have horrific aggravations. Some people develop the symptoms to prove the remedy. And so Hahnemann gave us pointers for this. And one of the pointers was try the olfactory dose. In other words, let them sniff the dose. And then finally, dilute the dose further. And some people may be able to take one potency in additional dilutions, where in some cases by multiple factors, by a factor of 30 or even 100 in one case that I used. I worked with a woman who treated her daughter, schizophrenic daughter, and she could only give her a dose in 100 times the dilution that ordinary folks can take without adverse reactions. So I cover all this stuff in tutorials. I think the Q potencies are not only more suitable because they can be repeated daily, their effect is longer, they're deeper acting, and they also have a much milder and more gentle action than the centesimal potencies. We'll go more in depth in this tutorial on posology.
Very important subject, and it sounds like you've done some excellent research and investigation into this area. I see we're running close on time. I'd like to give people an opportunity to ask some questions too, but I just have one more quick question, Sue, talking about all of these anecdotal factors. Could you be a little bit more specific and give us some examples of some of the things that are problematic?
Yeah. In the disc, we go more in detail. Again, under antidote, principles of antidoting, we go into what are antidotes, homeopathic treatment, and microwaves, exposure to wireless communication devices, clearly antidote homeopathic remedies again and again. That doesn't mean they always do, but air-to-ground transmitters, radar antennas, exposure to x-rays, ultrasounds, high-speed drilling equipment, many modern conveniences that we count on a daily basis can antidote homeopathic treatments. Remember, 19th century homeopaths didn't have that problem. Chemicals, scents, very common perfumes that people use. So how to remove all these and how to help people, especially those who have no other option, to make the changes in their lives, that's our job. We'll talk about that in the tutorial.
Fantastic. Well, I do want to give people an opportunity to ask some questions. Before I do that, though, let me just repeat again that if you want to visit Manfred Mueller's website and find out more about the courses and other things that he offers, you can go to his URL. It's VTHEHomeopathic, HOMEOPATHIC, college, college.org. Also on our website, the Whole Health Now website, if you go to wholehealthnow.com/books/Manfred-Mueller-CDS.html, you'll find it. Or if you go to any of the search pages and type in his name, you'll see a listing of all of the CDs that he has available. Let me go ahead now and open it up for – is there anything else you wanted to say before I open it up for questions, Manfred?
No, just thank you for giving me the opportunity to
go
into this.
We'll thank you in a minute. Okay, hold on 1 second. So any questions for Manfred Mueller?
Yes, I've got the question.
Go ahead, Krishna. Go ahead, Krishna.
Actually, I wanted to know that alumina, he just mentioned alumina.
What about that question? Go ahead, Krishna.
Yes. I myself suffering from this hypertension and all the sorts of investigative
get off
your cell phone.
Krishna, I cannot hear your question. I'm sorry. Either you have to speak up, or I can't hear what you're asking.
No. Can you hear now?
Yes. Go ahead. Ask the question. Alumina. Yes.
Alumina. I was just thinking because I never had this constipation, which is so terrible, and also a little loss of memory, and also I'm feeling as if I have a stroke or something, though I don't have other symptoms, paralysis or anything. But this high dosage of antihypertensive drugs, and now blood pressure is under control, but I'm having consequences that loss of memory and constipation and feeling very traumatized. Of course, there are some factors in the house that I'm feeling quite upset about it. So I was thinking Nux Vomica, he mentioned one, but I feel as if there is no heat left in the body. There's no heat. I'm shivering in spite of this 80 degree temperature. And so I was,
what is your question?
What is your question, Krishna? Yeah.
Take our Seneca.
Okay. All right. Listen, does somebody else have a question? Because, Krishna, if you want, you can call me later, and I can convey the question to Manfred and get him to answer it.
Can I have your telephone number?
Yes, it's 707-822-5807.
5807.
So any other questions for Manfred Mueller? We've still got about 3 or 4 minutes here. Here's an opportunity to have really one of the foremost scholars of homeopathy answer your questions.
Terribly nice.
Tim, I have a patient treating an elderly man, has diabetes and hypertension, and he's doing quite well on Lachesis. My question is, should I consider detoxifying the medications that he's on, even though he's doing well on the Lachesis?
Okay, what do you mean by doing well?
His numbers are going down. His hypertension is going down. His diabetic numbers are going down.
Right. In most cases, if you're doing well, then probably medications, their effect has subsided. If there's no aggravation from the remedy that you have chosen, then you don't need this additional treatment, although in most cases improvements are short-lived, and if you find that the treatment lasts only for a temporary, in other words, the values come down in this case only for a period of time, maybe a month or two, and then maybe going back up, then you can look further for an obstacle to cure.
Okay, and the first thing you would look at would be the medications he's taking now?
Absolutely. I would make a history, a beginning from birth. What has this person been exposed to in terms of treatment?
Okay.
And try to understand what happened over time. Now, I know diabetes is clearly a hereditary disease. And when you have a hereditary disease, you often end up needing a remedy that is, you could say, a part of the natural materia medica, which means basically a remedy that matches the symptoms of the manifest symptoms. However, all of this depends entirely on what happened over time to this patient.
Manfred, I assume you're familiar with the work of Elmiger and also the Haukunst people up in Ottawa. So, you know, in their model, they will literally just identify various vaccines or other stresses that the person was introduced, and regardless of whether that there's evidence that stress affected that person, they will simply literally give each of those substances chronologically. Is that what you do, or do you look for some type of susceptibility to that stress which somehow mistuned the life force?
I first thoroughly study the history to understand what happened, to classify the various milestones in disease in evolution over time to understand, and often you can verify from your ask more about what happened then when you were given this medication, how did it change things. So identify really what happened and which part of the medications have become part of the disease. So no, I don't think you have to do a routine, and you don't have to antidote every single medication. However, on the other hand, you can argue that it is it's understandable that they might want to antidote every single medication because of the additional difficulty that sometimes, since medications are often used to suppress, basically they're used to get rid of symptoms. So many symptoms are simply no longer there. And it's very clear when you do the reverse chronological tautopathy that some of these old symptoms reoccur as soon as you remove the long-term effects of a suppressive drug. And then suddenly, often the memory of the illness returns. Sometimes patients don't recall even what happened. So it's a kind of approach where you neither rely 100% on the etiological, the theory, in other words, the hypothesis of the evolution of the disease, nor entirely just on the overt phenomena. You rely on both.
Very interesting. Well, I see that we're up for time, unfortunately. Hopefully, you'll come back again. I know you've got a very busy schedule and quite a bit on your plate, but we'd love to have you come back and share more of your research and clinical experience and really tremendous wisdom relative to homeopathy. Let me go ahead and unmute the line. Give Manfred Mueller a big thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Kim.
All right. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for joining us. Have a good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.